Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York recently announced a new measure to help hundreds of thousands of families access child care subsidies, an online portal. It's replacing an antiquated county-by-county system that has left a lot of subsidy money on the table, even as the state has expanded who is eligible for child care assistance. The New York Public News Network's Amy Feireisel reports.
After several years of expansion, New York State has some of the most generous child care subsidies in the nation. Governor Kathy Hochul says for the families who sign up, it makes child care really affordable.
For a family of four earning $108,000 or less, that family will pay no more than $15 a week.
Compare $15 per week to the market cost of child care, between $200 and $400 per week per child.
Saving them thousands and thousands of dollars every year.
It's potentially enormous savings, and most families in rural areas of the state are eligible. But relatively few actually use it. Only 100,000 families are enrolled in the program, a fraction of the families that qualify. Kathy Broder is director of the Jefferson Lewis Child Care Project. I interviewed her about this issue last year.
There are a lot of people right now that have their kids enrolled in care, that have had their kids enrolled in care for a couple of years, that don't realize they could be getting help with paying for child care. The state has made this investment, but it won't go anywhere if people don't sign up for it.
Awareness is one issue. The other is the literal act of applying for the assistance. It's run county by county. In many places, you have to request an application, make an appointment with social services, and fill out a paper application before you even know if you're eligible. It's a barrier for the parents that need it most.
You can apply for, you know, Medicaid online. You can update your driver's license to the DMV. You can do all sorts of things online in New York State, but you can't apply for help affording the cost of care.
Pete Nabosny is the policy director for a New York State advocacy group called the Children's Agenda. I spoke with him previously about the child care subsidy money being left on the table by a convoluted process.
There's all this energy. Let's extend eligibility to more families. Let's make the rules better. And yet, New York State systems for actually like administering those child care programs, those systems are horribly antiquated.
Until now, the state launched a new online portal to help people apply for child care assistance. That might sound dry, but it's a huge change. In the portal, families can quickly check their eligibility and know within 10 minutes whether they qualify for help. They can apply online instead of in person with a paper form. Governor Kathy Hochul says she hopes the portal will at least double the number of families using New York's child care assistance in the next year.
Working parents don't have the time to navigate the bureaucracy, go to in-person appointments, fill out endless forms. They have families to take care of. We need to make finding and using these resources much more simple.
The website is ny.gov/childcare. The portal joins a host of other state efforts to bolster child care in New York. Things like expanding the state child tax credit and the employer-sponsored child care program, which helps companies to develop their own child care centers. It's also set against a backdrop of some enormous structural problems. Providers closing, chronic understaffing in child care centers because of low pay, and New York's famously complex maze of bureaucracy, red tape, and regulation, felt both by child care providers and families. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a longtime advocate for more federal aid in child care, spoke alongside Hochul. She says the state and the nation has got to figure these problems out.
This is the cost of our economy. If you don't have affordable daycare, she can't be at work. If she's not at work, she's not paying taxes, she's not paying into her Social Security.
The hope is that the new portal will be one step towards getting money meant to support New York families where it's supposed to go. I'm Amy Feireisel for the New York Public News Network.
We'll be right back.
listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Governor Kathy Hochul's decision to pause a New York City congestion pricing plan earlier this year upended the state legislative session and put the MTA's capital plans into question. The program would have charged drivers entering Lower Manhattan a $15 toll. This week, I sat down with a lawmaker who's been speaking out against the plan, State Senator James Skoufis. The Democrat of the 42nd District says the plan, which environmentalists say would cut down on traffic pollution, was untenable for his constituents.
I'm relieved. I'm thankful for the outcome here. My constituents and I were appalled by the prospect of this new tax, and it is a tax. And look, you know, I've seen some of the advocates in New York City, transit advocates, up in arms. Oh, the governor. Oh, you know, James Skoufis and other legislators. You know, they just love cars, and you know they just want to shovel and funnel more cars into our community. It's got nothing to do with that. Here's what it has to do with: two things. Number one, it's not just $15. It's $15 in this new toll. Yes. But it's also then $15 to get over the George Washington Bridge. It's $20 from Orange County round trip in gas. And so for a working person in Orange County to drive into New York City, it's a $50 bill for the privilege. And that's before you get to anything else. You might have to pay for parking. You know, certainly if you're there, you're, you know, whatever meals, you know, the normal stuff. $50 just to get to and from New York City, an hour north here in Orange County. But here's the real rub. Here's the real rub. Ostensibly, congestion pricing is supposed to, I'm told by the supporters, you know, nudge people out of their cars, take the train instead, disincentivize folks from driving into New York City, where no doubt there is lots of congestion. All you need is, you know, two working eyes to be able to see that. Now, here's the rub in Orange County. We don't have a train into New York City. We have one measly, terrible train line that terminates in New Jersey. And then you've got to meander around the Secaucus Junction, you know, complex to a different station, a different platform, wait for the train, and then you're eventually brought into Penn Station. Then you probably have to get on subways, too, to get to wherever you're going. And so, you know, we don't even have a train. And by the way, you can go 6 hours in the middle of the day in Orange County without a single train taking us from Orange County to Secaucus Junction in New Jersey. And so there are no trains for us to say, oh, yes, okay, we don't want to pay the toll. We'll just hop on a convenient train. Does not exist. And so if the transit folks and the MTA and all these, you know, the small minority of folks who are cheering a $15 toll, if they want to build me a one-seat ride from Orange County into Penn Station with trains every 45 minutes like it's across the river, then fine, let's have the conversation. Until that day, my folks have to drive in most cases into New York City, and $50 is too much money. It's outrageous. So I'm glad that the governor pumped the brakes on this.
We're running out of time quick. Senator Skoufis, I see the governor has called for a climate summit. She's invited a number of different groups in, and I'm guessing you're supportive of it, but I see that, for example, the Business Council of New York State says you got to reevaluate this, trying to reach your goals, because they're worried about the costs associated with making the transition. At the same time, we're seeing more flooding, tornado records, you know, everything else is happening that leads us to believe we need to do something. Will you be able to get some input on this?
I sure hope so. I would expect so. You know, look, the legislature has been active on climate change, on this issue generally. And as far as the summit goes, you know, I think the more conversation that we can have on this viscerally important issue, the better. We should welcome it. You know, it is clear we are not on track to meet our goals under our 2019 landmark climate change legislation. That's highly problematic. And so, yeah, I think we do need to convene a summit. I think we need to figure out what exactly is going on, why we're falling short, it seems, on hitting those targets, and what do we have to do? And yes, we absolutely, part of the equation here is we have to be mindful of the costs. There is a significant transition involved here, and we have to make sure that working class, middle class, New Yorkers are insulated from any heavy-handedness along the way, because we, as we all know, we already live in a high tax, high cost of living state. We can't exacerbate that, but we do have to talk about getting off fossil fuels. The climate is, no question, empirically warming. There's more flooding. There are more tornadoes, like you said, including very recently, just the other day, another one here in New York, which is not something that we ever saw or talked about until recently.
City of Buffalo.
And so we have to deal with this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking into your bio a little bit, and we haven't talked about this, I don't think, on the Capital Connection, but it's instructive, I think, and I wondered if you might expand upon it. You spent the first many years of your life in New York City in public housing, one generation removed from food stamps. And, you know, that experience must inform how you look at issues in the state. And I'm imagining you're glad when you see efforts by the legislature, for example, in the last budget, try to get this housing bill passed, which they did.
Yeah, look, everyone's background and upbringing, where they come from, is instructive to who they are. And certainly I'm no exception. Before moving up to Orange County with my family in elementary school, yes, I grew up in NYCHA housing. I was on Casino Boulevard, the Pamunak public housing projects, and which was a working class development. And certainly, you know, I've seen now two perspectives, both in my case, very much connected, where, you know, you come from a background where, you know, it's hardworking. My dad was an immigrant with his family coming here from Greece, and in really their case, came here with nothing. On my mom's side, as I just said, my mom and her family grew up in NYCHA, New York City public housing. I've got that perspective. I come from that background. But my parents, my family, they worked hard to get to the middle class. And then we moved to the suburbs. And, you know, I've seen what that transition looks like. I've lived it through my parents, through my family. And that is something I'd like to think I bring to the legislature. What can I be doing every day to help people get to the middle class and to remain in the middle class, because that's where my family comes from. So yes, I appreciate you bringing that up, and that is certainly instructive to what I do in the legislature.
That's State Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 42nd District. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With affordable housing at a premium, a New York State program is aiming to offset elevated home prices. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas with more.
Last fall, New York Governor Kathy Hochul launched the Pro-Housing Communities Program to fast-track $650 million in state funds to villages, towns, and counties that demonstrate a commitment to increasing housing inventory. So far, more than 300 communities have submitted letters of intent, while 75 communities have met all requirements. According to Ruth Ann Visnauskas, commissioner of the New York State Division of Housing and Community Renewal.
We're really excited about the program. You know, we think it really provides a benefit to communities around the state that are looking to grow their housing stock. And as the housing commissioner, certainly everywhere I go, it is one of the number one issues that people certainly talk to me about. And I think generally talking about at the municipal level that there's not enough housing, rents are increasing, home prices are increasing faster than incomes. And so people are getting sort of increasingly priced out of the housing market at all levels. And so we really see that one of the sort of solutions to that is increasing supply sort of everywhere and of all types, right? Housing for young people looking for their first place to rent, for small families looking to grow into a larger home, for seniors looking to downsize, you know, really every kind of type of housing. So we think providing, as we sort of did in this year's budget, $650 million of discretionary funds is a way to sort of reward the communities that are applying to us and getting certified to give them resources that they can use to invest back into their localities.
Under the program, localities that submit documentation that their housing stock has increased by 1% in the previous year or 3% over the previous 3 years downstate or by 0.33% in the last year, or 1% over the previous 3 years upstate, will qualify for the certification. Communities that have not yet seen housing growth can also achieve pro-housing community designation by passing a resolution stating their commitment to pro-housing principles, along with submitting the required housing and zoning data.
But we have a lot of people coming to us. We also make ourselves very available in terms of webinars and meetings and calls to provide technical assistance, talk through the process. If people get stuck, you know, we want to work with them on that. We know that some localities that are very small don't necessarily always have enough staff to handle the data, getting us the permit data. So we are working directly with those localities so we can support them. We want people to be successful here. We certainly don't want, you know, if there's barriers that we can help overcome, we want to make sure we're doing that as the state.
According to the website Redfin, in June 2024, home prices in the town of Gilderland were up 23.9% compared to the previous year, selling for a median price of $480,000. Town planner Ken Kowalczyk says Gilderland is the first municipality in Albany County to be certified as a pro-housing community, which opens up the ability to apply for several funding programs.
One of the underlying initiatives with the pro-housing designation is the state is looking for those communities to really take the lead providing a diversity of housing. So that could be, you know, single family, multifamily, townhomes, condos, promoting all of the above. One of the concerns we've heard throughout our year and a half long town comprehensive plan update thus far is housing affordability. And that's also one of the items that this pro-housing designation is looking for municipalities to tackle. It is something we are addressing as part of our comprehensive plan update. We have had some projects in the past that were proposing affordable housing, but were reliant on state grant funds. And unfortunately, in the past, those projects have been denied. So one of my goals is by achieving this designation that in the future, if we have projects that are incorporating affordability into it and they're reliant on state grant funding, that by having this pro-housing designation now, hopefully those projects will be supported at the state level to achieve that grant funding.
Kowalczyk says housing diversity is complicated because only 1% of town land is zoned for apartments, with some 60% zoned for single-family dwellings. Still, Visnauskas is confident the pro-housing program will flourish across New York.
This is really about supporting communities to provide housing options for, again, sort of people all across the spectrum that are looking for different types of housing options. And we understand that, you know, communities need a lot of resources to be ready for that and are through this $650 million making a big effort to do that. And I think we'll continue to grow the program to make sure that as there's other needs that come up, that we can continue to support communities that are growing their housing stock.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The spotted lantern fly has landed in parts of New York, according to the State Department of Agriculture and Markets. The Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons finds out where.
Indigenous to China, the invasive species has been discovered in New York's grape-growing region, a staple of the Finger Lakes economy because of its vast number of wineries. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the plant hopper feeds on plants including stone fruits, hops, and hardwood trees, secreting a fluid called honeydew that causes damaging mold as it ferments. The spotted lanternfly was first discovered in the U.S. in Pennsylvania in 2014 and now has a foothold in several northeast states, including Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. The pest popped up in New York State on Staten Island in 2020, and the Department of Environmental Conservation's Division of Lands and Forests and the Agriculture and Markets Division of Plant Industry, along with federal partners, have worked to eradicate the population, protecting crops. Brian Eschenar, a senior extension associate with New York State Integrated Pest Management at Cornell University's College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, says the insects pose threats to agriculture, logging, and natural resources.
You'll notice the foliage of a plant that they're feeding on looks fine. They're actually tapping into the pipework of the tree, the xylem and the phloem, and they're extracting sap. And that can be really harmful for our grapevines, especially when they're feeding late in the season. They're removing so much sap that the plant doesn't have the reserves to adequately survive the winter and so that following spring, they might not come back. So we really want to prevent that late season feeding, particularly in our vineyards.
Robert Cole, a DEC forester, says as it gets cold, the population is expected to travel to the Adirondacks in North Country.
May not survive in the Adirondacks, but certainly in the low-lying, warmer locations around the Adirondacks. So a good portion of New York is susceptible to this insect.
SLF have been detected across the state, including the Hudson Valley, Capital Region, and in the Buffalo and Rochester area. The insects, if left undisturbed, could distress the wine and juice grape industry. Experts say the bug is not harmful to humans and cannot survive indoors. Cole calls the fly hitchhikers, saying they attach to vehicles, trains, and boats looking for protection from predators and weather. Eschenauer says the SLF, not strong flyers, have natural predators assisting in eradication efforts.
Including spiders, praying mantis, an insect called wheel bugs, and it seems like those populations are building where spotted lanternfly is, maybe taking advantage of this new food source. So that kind of natural predation is happening. Also, there are some fungi that, with the right conditions, will affect spotted lanternflies.
Eschenauer says the flies lay eggs during the fall, which then hatch and reproduce until the first hard freeze of the next winter. Scott Litwin, a horticultural inspector with the Department of Agriculture and Markets Division of Plant Industry, says outbreaks can harm the agricultural economy. Litwin says if you find SLF eggs, remove them.
You want to make sure when you do scrape them that you're scraping with a little bit of firmness, so you really crush the eggs and you're not just popping them off the surface where you find them.
Egg masses are typically brownish gray in color and look waxy and mud-like when new. Older masses are brown and scaly. The Department of Agriculture and Markets also showcased its use of drones as a tool in the fight against SLF.
We have liftoff.
Colin O'Brien, a horticultural inspector, says the device allows crews to see hiding spots that are often too dangerous to access themselves.
Whether it's high up in a tree or along a hillside in a deep ravine or along railways or truck stops where it's quite dangerous to be, we can fly the drone around a rail car, up over a semi-truck, and be able to inspect without having to climb around in a dangerous area.
State officials say residents in infested areas should remain vigilant as New York is on the cusp of potential negative impacts on agriculture and the economy. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Clinton County American Legion and the town of Plattsburgh hosted a National Purple Heart Day ceremony at the Battlefield Memorial Gateway Park this week. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
The town of Plattsburgh is an officially designated Purple Heart community, and an obelisk featuring the Purple Heart marks the beginning of the Purple Heart Trail at the Battlefield Memorial Gateway Park. Veterans and community members gathered at the park to recognize local Purple Heart recipients. The military decoration is awarded to those killed or wounded while serving. Town Supervisor Michael Cashman led the ceremony.
Originally established by General George Washington on August 7th, 1782, as the badge of military merit, the Purple Heart is one of the oldest military awards presented to servicemen. After fading into obscurity for 150 years, the Purple Heart was revived in 1932. Becoming a symbol of the deepest sacrifice made by our service members in the pursuit of liberty, justice, and freedom.
But cannot pour arms. Prepare to fire. Aim.
Clinton County Veterans Service Agency Director Kevin LaBeouf recognized the Purple Heart recipients in attendance.
Chris Pazer, who served in Iraq, received one Purple Heart. Jimmy Duvan served in Vietnam, won Purple Heart. Harry Laundrie, served Vietnam, won Purple Heart. Dave Pickering, Vietnam, won Purple Heart. Mike Rabideau, Vietnam, won Purple Heart. Greg Lee, Vietnam, 2 Purple Hearts. Bob Wheeler, Vietnam, 3 Purple Hearts.
Clinton County American Legion Adjutant Robert St. John.
With the Purple Heart, we're trying to bring to light the actual sacrifice, whether the wounded or killed in action, to make people aware that there were veterans that gave their lives or gave a part of their body or whatever for the freedoms that we all enjoy now.
Recipients of the Purple Heart insist they are not heroes. Town of Peru resident Gregory Lee lost an arm in Vietnam. The Marine says he was wounded twice and medically retired by his 19th birthday.
I mean, I'm proud of it, but Purple Heart doesn't make you a hero. You know, you hear that, and it's not so. The heroes are the 17 buddies that lost their lives during my time with my unit. I don't feel like a hero. I spend a lot of time with combat veterans, and I suffer from PTSD. That doesn't make me a hero either, but at the same time, it doesn't make me weak.
Led by the Purple Heart recipients, the community walked the Purple Heart Trail, which was lined with 500 luminaria lanterns to represent all Purple Heart recipients. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. Look for program number 2432. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.